Chapter 20.
I stood stock still outside Grand Central Station looking up. I felt like a child again, standing at the bottom of a concrete canyon with sky-high walls. Crowds of people rushed like rapids. Strangers slammed me as they passed. Move it, asshole. I remembered how it felt to grow up in the adult's world, as though everyone had met together and figured out a plan of action, and I didn't have a clue. I worked my way to the curb and asked the guy at the newsstand, "Where's 42nd Street?" "You're standing on it," he snapped. "How do you find an apartment in this city?" I asked. "You want an apartment? Go find someone who's got a rent-controlled apartment and kill them." He wasn't smiling as he handed me a copy of The Village Voice and took my money. I pressed my back against the facade of a building and watched the crowd flow past me. I realised this city required a strategy, and I didn't have one. I had $600. It had to get me an apartment with enough left for food and tokens till my first paycheck. It turned out to be true that 42nd Street was filled with all-night theatres. Admission was $3 for kung fu movies that were endlessly strung together. I chose a theatre and entered an all-male world. The theatre smelled like stale cigarettes and reefer. Many of the seats were broken, something I didn't discover until I sat down and landed on the sticky floor. The men nearest me checked me out and went back to staring at the screen. I loved the movies. They seemed to share a theme. A young man is faced with a powerful enemy. He's forced to find a teacher who can train him in monkey style, praying mantis, tiger, eagle claw, scorpion. The twist is that the teacher is not powerful enough on his own, or dies before the young man is ready. It always takes some special combination of skills and insights to defeat the foe. The hero was honourable, marked by humility and discipline, and was very respectful, if not chaste, with his girlfriend. But every time a woman appeared on the screen, the men around me shouted, "Eat that pussy, fuck that bitch." At first it scared me, then I realised, with the exception of me, this was an all-male audience. Who were they talking to, if not each other? Was each man who shouted from his stoned stupor trying to convince the men nearby that a woman could still make his dick hard? That no matter how the weight of the streets had crushed him, he was still a real man? I kept putting off going to the bathroom, but after a while I just had to. The stench hit me as I opened the men's room door. An older man was sitting on one toilet, a needle stuck in his arm, nodding. The tile was gummy with crud. There were no doors on the stalls. Most of the toilets were overflowing with shit and toilet paper. I snuck into the women's bathroom. It was musty from lack of use. Just as I was zipping my pants back up, the door opened. "What are you doing in here?" a man in a red blazer asked me. I let my voice settle into rough. "Taking a shit, do you mind?" I pushed past him and went back to my seat. By the time I'd seen each film twice, I began to doze. The next morning I walked, asking directions of nearly everyone I passed, till I was on the doorstep of the first rental agency I'd found, in The Voice. "Do you have anything cheaper?" I asked the woman agent. "You want an apartment or a dump? $250, that's a bargain." I thought about it. "When can I move in?" "Here's the keys," she said. I reached for the keys, she pulled them back. "That's 1 month's rent, 1 month's security, and a finder's fee. $750, payable now." "I only have $500, I told her, hoping the extra $100 would last me till I found a job and got paid. She looked me up and down and held out an open palm. "Give me the $500 now, you'll owe me the finder's fee. You have till Friday. You don't come up with the money by then, you're out." I thanked her as I signed the lease. She needn't have given me the keys. The apartment had no locks. It also had no stove, refrigerator, running water, or floorboards. I stepped carefully between the 2x4s underfoot. I raced back down the 5 flights of stairs and called the agency. "It's unlivable," I told the woman. "That's not my problem," she said. "I want my money back." She laughed, almost gently. You signed a lease, honey. It's yours for 30 days. "I want my money back. There's got to be laws. You can't do that," I spluttered, into the dead receiver. It was dusk and I was cold. The man in the corner liquor store gave me a couple of cardboard cartons. I climbed back up the 5 flights of stairs. I wedged a piece of cardboard in the door to keep it shut, flattened the rest of the boxes and used them for a bed. I lay there feeling like a damn fool. Now most of my money was gone and I had no income. I heard footsteps on the hall stairs. I wondered who it could be since the building appeared to be deserted. The footsteps grew closer, paused on my flight and approached my door. I lay still, trying not to breathe. One push on my door and this stranger would know I had wedged it from the inside. I was quiet for a long time as someone stood silently outside my door. Then I heard the footsteps recede back down the stairs. I jumped to my feet and grabbed my duffel bag, eager to get out of this dangerous dump. War had made me think I could survive this city. I didn't know any other place to spend the night except the Kung Fu theatres. They felt a whole lot safer than an abandoned building. I stopped a Chinese man on the street and asked him where I was. Mott Street, he answered. Where you want to go? I sighed. Times Square, 42nd Street. He indicated the distance with a wave of his arm. A train. Where were the damn trains? How did people find the subways in the city? I asked and asked until someone pointed to a staircase leading down under the street. I bought a token and entered the world of New York City subways. Nothing in life had prepared me for this. In Buffalo, I always had my own vehicle. Even when I had to take a bus, we all sat daydreaming in the same direction. On the subway, we faced each other. The subway car was crowded. I had never had the opportunity to observe people this way. Most of the riders looked asleep on their feet, their eyes glazed over. Others buried their noses in newspapers and books. I suddenly realised that at least a few people were doing exactly what I was doing. They were looking at people. They were looking at me. The woman sitting across from me stared as though I was from another planet. She nudged her boyfriend. Is that a guy or a girl? He looked at me from head to toe. How should I know? I hoped we would arrive at 42nd Street soon. Hey, he demanded, are you a guy or what? I stared back at him with my flat face on. Hey, I asked you a fucking question, are you deaf? I didn't answer. He got up and stood over me, holding the straps for support. He leaned near my face, I could smell beer. I'm asking you one more time, you motherfucker. What the fuck are you? The train stopped at 42nd Street and the doors opened. He was blocking my escape. Come on, hun. His girlfriend tugged at him. I stood up. We both squared off nose to nose. I clenched my fists at my side. Come on, hun, she cajoled. You promised me you wouldn't get in a fight again today. They both turned to get off the train. I decided to stay on. You fucking faggot, he shouted at me. Fuck you, I yelled back at him. It's a guy, he told his girlfriend. I got off at the next station and walked back down 8th Avenue towards 42nd Street. If I made enough money, maybe I'd go back to Buffalo. At that moment, I believed it. Looking for fun, honey? A woman stepped out in front of me on the sidewalk and opened her fake leopard coat to show me her black bustier. Let me take good care of you. She pursed her lips and hooked her arm through mine. I remembered coming out as a baby butch and being nurtured by the strength of pros like her. Once I'd been on their side in the world, now I was seen as a trick. I pulled away from her in horror. Fuck you, she spat on the sidewalk in front of me. I noticed a squad car parked diagonally across the intersection. I heard sirens racing up behind me. I neared a small throng of cops. One of them pushed a black drag queen in fishnet stockings up against a squad car and cuffed her hands behind her back. She turned her face towards me. Help me, she asked wordlessly. I don't know how, my eyes answered. Two cops were hovering over another drag queen who was sprawled on the asphalt. The blood bubbled out of a wide crack in her forehead. One of the cops knelt down beside her. He never took his eyes off me as he reached forward and took one of her hormone-swollen breasts in his hand. Honk, honk, he laughed as he squeezed it. I stopped dead in my tracks, chilled and filled with hatred. I couldn't think of a way to intervene except to stand there and witness. The cop standing nearest me walked over. He brought his face up close to mine. What's your fucking problem? He asked me. He'd eaten garlic recently. I didn't move or speak. He jabbed me in the rib with the end of his nightstick. How'd you like me to run you in? He asked. The thought of getting busted alone in New York City terrified me. Answer me, yes or no? I paused. He grabbed his nightstick with both hands and held it horizontally across my chest. Yes or no, asshole? I exhaled. No. You mean no, sir? He taunted me. I pressed my lips together. He stared into my eyes. Get the fuck out of here, he ordered. I ran down 46th Street until I couldn't hear their laughter anymore. My breath came in short gasps. An icy wind blew off the river. A young child was standing near the driver's side of a car, talking to the man behind the steering wheel. If she hadn't have been wearing high heels, she wouldn't have been tall enough to meet the driver's eyes. She wore a thin, short jacket and seamed stockings. She must have been freezing. I saw her walk around to the passenger side of the car and get in. I couldn't run or walk any further. I leaned my forehead against the cold brick face of a building. The physical pain began in my chest and worked its way up to my throat. I opened my mouth to scream, but no sound would come. The next morning, I was waiting in front of the 42nd Street temporary labour office when it opened. A man in a plaid sports coat read over my application. What kind of discharge? He asked me. Huh? The service, what kind of discharge you got? I shrugged. I hadn't filled out that section of the application. I wasn't in the service. He leaned back in his chair. Why not? I leaned forward. Mister, you got a job for me, or not? He slammed his pen down. You got a driver's license? I shook my head. Get one, he said. No, I told him. I don't want to drive in the city. Too crazy. He wrote something down on a piece of paper. Know how to drive a forklift? I nodded. Sewing machine factory. Skid work, he said. He was a man of few words. What's it pay? He smiled. $80 a week. We take $40 out this week and next. I leaned forwards in anger. What for? For finding you the job. You want it or not? I exhaled through clenched teeth. Yeah, I'll take it. His spirit seemed brighter. Good. Here's the directions. Listen, kid, nothing in life comes free. During the week, I lived on peanut butter sandwiches. On payday, I treated myself to the cafeteria across from the factory. Brisket, I pointed to it. The man behind the cafeteria counter nodded and began to carve it. Lo mismo, the older woman on my left told him. My stomach growled. The woman smiled knowingly at me. We both hungrily eyed the meat being carved. The stack of meat on my plate continued to grow, and still the man piled on more. The woman nodded at me. I raised both eyebrows. She sighed. A man needs more food, she said. After work, I bought two strong hasps and two locks at the hardware store and went back to the abandoned building on Mott Street. I installed them so that I could lock the door from the inside or the outside. Then I bought a piece of plywood to cover a patch of floorboards and a cheap air mattress for a bed. On my first night in New York City, I'd been scared to death in this building at night. Now, a week later, I thought I'd die if I didn't get a few nights of privacy. There was no running water in the building, but when one of the guys at the movie theatre had found me rinsing a t-shirt in the men's room sink, he told me Grand Central was a much better place to clean up. During the day, I worked temp assignments washing dishes and loading trucks. After work, I waited till the rush hour thinned, washed out a t-shirt in the men's room in Grand Central Station, and took it home to dry. At dawn, I went back to Grand Central Station to wash up. At that hour, the men's room belonged to homeless men who, like myself, struggled to hang on to the last shred of self-worth. On two occasions, I suspected that a homeless man, bundled up in coats, was really a woman. Through a second agency, I got a job as a night watchman. At least I could use the bathroom in private. I had to make rounds every 60 minutes. With the help of an alarm clock, I could sleep 42 minutes each hour. Double shifts were killing me, but I was driven to earn enough money to get a real apartment. As the weather got colder, I developed a cough that I couldn't quiet with lozenges and syrups. My throat was raw. I hoped it would go away. "Go home, for Christ's sakes," one of the guys on the loading platform said earlier in the week. "Can't afford to," I told him. Fever consumed me. Sidewalks rolled under my feet. Buildings curved over me and blocked the sky. Wind tore at my clothing. I made it to my apartment by leaning against the flimsy banister and resting on each landing. My sleeping bag and pillow looked inviting. The room was dark. For the first time in weeks, I was warm enough. Too warm, really. As I lay down to sleep, I thought I saw a bat-like demon flying back and forth above me, filling the room with the hum of beating wings. I fell asleep to escape my terror. When I awoke, I saw Teresa sitting next to me. My pillow was soaking wet. Her hand felt cool on my cheek. I'd almost forgotten her smile was a gift. "Teresa," I whispered, "I love you so much. I miss you, honey. Please take me back." She silenced me with her hand. "Jess, you have to go to the hospital." I shook my head. "I can't. I'm too sick to protect myself." She soothed me with her fingertips. "It's time now, sweetheart. You can do it. I know you can." "Teresa, I'm so scared." She nodded as she ran her fingers through my hair. "I know, Jess, I know." I shook my head. "I don't just mean the hospital. I don't know how to live my life anymore. I'm afraid." She nodded. "You're doing it, Jess. Just hang on." I tried to get up on one elbow, but I sank back down. "I'm so alone, Teresa. I don't belong anywhere. I don't even know if I still exist." Teresa wiped the tears from my eyes. I took her hand in mine. "Please, Teresa, stay with me. Please don't go. I'm so scared." "I'm right here, baby," she reassured me. "I've always been here with you." I rolled down a hill toward unconsciousness. "But you're fading," I whispered. I strained to walk against a bitter wind. I couldn't make it to the hospital. My legs wouldn't carry me much further and I felt too weak to submit to an examination. Teresa had overestimated my strength, physically and emotionally. I coughed so violently, I was afraid my ribs might crack. The sound of a distant siren seemed to bend like taffy. City lights shimmered. I walked aimlessly through the streets of the Lower East Side, unsure how to get back to my apartment. "C&D, a young man whispered as I passed. "What are you looking for?" I shook my head. "I don't know." His eyes lit up. "What do you need?" I coughed and coughed until the streetlights spun around me. "Man," he said, "you're sick, eh?" "It was just a sore throat, but now I can't stop coughing." "How much money you got?" he asked. I shrugged. "You got $20? I nodded. "Wait here," he told me. I stood on the corner so long, I forgot what I was waiting for. He came back with an amber vial. As I reached for it, he pulled it back. I handed him the $20 bill. He said, "You take them 4 times a day. You've got to take all of them, you know. That's what the man said." I frowned. "What is it?" He shrugged. "Medicine. I told him what you told me. You got another $10? "Why?" I answered. That meant yes. "I got 4 codeine here that ought to make you stop coughing, or at least stop caring. I smiled and handed him another $10. Thanks, I said, and meant it. He shook my hand. You take care of yourself now, here. I bought 2 quarts of juice and found my way back to the abandoned space I called home. Every few hours when the coughing woke me, I'd pop a pill and codeine tablet and go back to sleep. When I woke up Sunday morning, my bedroll was soaked. I sat up and rubbed my eyes. I felt stronger. The illness was breaking up and leaving me. The rent on this place was due at the end of each week. I'd found a cheap hotel near the temp agencies, which I could rent by the week until I could save up for a decent apartment, a real home. I looked around. I couldn't believe I'd lived in this dump for a whole month. How much? I asked the super. $325 a month with heat and hot water, the toilets in the hall, $325 security deposit. I nodded. It had a small bedroom, kitchen and living room, all in one straight line. I gave him the cash, he handed me the lease. Wait, I said as he turned to leave, there's no bathtub? There, he pointed to a corner of the kitchen. It was a tub covered with a sheet of metal. Strange city. I locked the door of my apartment and turned to look around. It needed paint, yellow for the kitchen, sky blue for the bedroom, creamy ivory for the living room. I needed rugs and dishes and silverware, pots and pans, cleanser for the sink. I opened my duffel bag to look for a pad and pen to make a list. There was the china kitten that Millie had left me. I placed it gingerly on the mantel in the living room. I put the amber glass from the home Teresa and I once had on the windowsill in the kitchen and made a mental note to buy some flowers. I left the wedding ring Teresa had bought me on the mantel. I decided to buy yellow calico curtains for the living room windows, like the kinds Betty had made for me for my garage apartment. I glanced at the door once more to make sure it was locked. I pried open the window that led to the fire escape. From there, I could see the East River. Competing sounds of Latin music from cars and apartment windows filled my ears. Children played in the street, their mothers yelled at them from the windows. In any language, their warnings meant, be careful. New buds were popping from the skinny trees that lined the street. It was spring. I noticed wiry weeds, almost as big as saplings, growing between the buildings and in vacant lots. They pushed through cracks in the cement, growing with scarcely any soil or light. The sight was strangely reassuring. I figured if they could survive here, so could I. A woman in the supermarket turned and stared at me as I clawed at my crotch. The itching and burning had become unbearable over the months. It wasn't going away by itself. I had a vaginal infection. I'd put off doing anything about it, refusing to admit I needed to see a doctor. Why did the infection have to be there, of all places? Why couldn't it be an ear infection? I had a flyer on my refrigerator door that I'd lifted off a lamppost advertising a women's health clinic in my neighbourhood. On Wednesday night, I mustered my courage and went. This clinic is for women, the receptionist said. I nodded. I know, I have a vaginal infection, I whispered. A what? She asked. I took a deep breath and spoke in a stronger voice. A vaginal infection. Stillness fell over the crowded waiting room. The silence punished me. The receptionist looked me up and down. Are you kidding? I shook my head. I have a vaginal infection. I came here for help. The receptionist nodded. Have a seat, sir. I debated leaving, but the itching and burning were getting worse every day. I watched the receptionist greet the woman who arrived after me. Just pull your own chart and have a seat, she said. The doctor will be with you shortly. Help yourself to herbal tea. Everyone in the waiting room was staring at me. I looked at the bulletin board. Women's dancers and rituals, therapists, masseuses and accountants. New symbols, a two-edged hatchet, a circle with a cross on the bottom. New names, good woman, silver woman. I could hear myself being discussed in loud voices. He's crazy. Well, why can't they be crazy in their own space? I found an empty chair and sat down. I noticed a book on the rack next to me called Our Bodies, Ourselves, and made a mental note to buy it in a bookstore. A shadow fell across me, a woman with a clipboard. Her nameplate read Roz. Once inside the examining room, Roz threw down her clipboard on the desk and nodded towards a chair. What's this all about? All my words tumbled out. I tried to tell her everything, who I was, why I'd come. Roz sat back in her chair and nodded as if she really understood. Then she said, I don't know what your problem is, but this is a clinic for women who are sick and you're using up the resources right now. What? You may think you're a woman, Roz continued, but that doesn't mean that you are one. My anger ignited. Fuck you, I shouted. She leaned back in her chair and smirked. What a very male thing to say. I felt my face grow purple with rage. Fuck all of you. I got up to leave. A doctor blocked my exit. What's going on in here? She asked. Roz must have made a gesture I couldn't see. The doctor nodded. Come with me, the doctor said. I followed her into the hall. What's going on? She asked me. I sighed. I have a vaginal infection. She searched my face with her eyes. Have you taken any antibiotics recently? I brightened. Maybe. I took something a couple of months ago for a bad cough. She nodded. How long have you had the vaginal infection? I shrugged. A couple of months? Her eyes widened. You've had this for a couple of months and you didn't do anything about it? Well, I was hoping it would go away. She smiled lightly. Let's take a look. Come with me. I stiffened with fear. Too much had already happened to me here. I couldn't let her touch me there. I can't. I told her, please. It's been hard to do this. I just can't. She watched the emotions I couldn't hide. This is a prescription for Monistat, she scribbled on a pad. It should stop the itching and burning sensation. Next time you take antibiotics, eat a cup of yogurt each day. I wondered if she was pulling my leg about the yogurt. You believe me, don't you? I asked her. She shrugged. You might be a man, but if you are a woman, I don't want to send you away. It doesn't cost me anything to write you out a prescription. When's the last time you had a pap smear? I froze. She pressed. Within the last 3 years? I dropped my eyes, but she wouldn't let go of the question. Within the last 5, 6? I shook my head. I don't know what that is, I admitted. When I looked up, she had tears in her eyes. Now I believe you, she said. Why? I asked her. Plenty of men don't know this stuff either, do they? She nodded. Yes, but they don't feel ashamed. Who's your regular doctor? I don't have one. She continued to watch my face in a way that unnerved me. I'd like you to come back for an examination and a pap smear. Sure, I lied. I doubted I'd be able to get up the emotional energy to face the scene in the reception area again unless I was in real bad shape. And besides, the thought of a doctor opening my legs and examining me chilled me to the bone. Thanks for listening, I told her. Almost nobody hears me anymore. She squeezed my arm. You can make an appointment at the front desk on your way out. Don't put it off too long. I could still feel her hand on my arm after she'd walked away. I suddenly realised I didn't know her name. I might need to come back someday. I started down the hall after her. Roz came out of the examining room and blocked my way. What's her name? I asked Roz. I forgot to ask. Roz's voice was cold. You got what you wanted, now leave. You're wrong, Roz, I corrected her. I got what I needed. You have no idea how much I want. Every time I got a paycheck, I used part of it on my apartment. I spent one whole weekend spackling the cracks in my walls and ceilings. As I applied paint to each room with broad strokes, my spirits lifted. On my most ambitious weekend, I sanded all the wood floors. Then I started from the furthest corner of the apartment and polyurethaned myself out the door. That night I slept at 42nd Street Theatre again, just for one more night. The floors were dazzling. It added a new dimension underfoot, as though the ceilings were raised or the apartment had grown in size. I found a black Guatemalan rug at a flea market. It had tiny flecks of white in it. I unrolled it in my living room and stood back to look. It reminded me of the night sky filled with stars. Gradually, I bought furniture, a sturdy couch and reading chair, a mahogany kitchen table and chairs. At the Salvation Army, I found a bed. The head and footboards were ovals carved out of cherry. I went crazy buying sheets at Macy's. As my house came together, I suddenly wanted things that made my body feel good. I threw out my old jeans and bought new chinos, underwear, shirts, and 2 pairs of sneakers so that I didn't have to pound the pavement in the same pair every day. I bought thick, soft towels and fragrances for my bath that pleased me. And then one day, I looked around at my apartment and realised I'd made a home.